KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
Well, Pat Cashman is certainly no mystery. For more than 40 years, he's delighted Pacific Northwest television viewers, playing a wide range of sketch comedy characters we all came to know and love. But don't let Pat's comic antics fool you. He's got more than 24 Emmy Awards under his belt and is known for his roles as a writer, director, and producer. Pat Cashman joins us tonight on Northwest Now. We all know Pat Cashman best for his run on Almost Live, where he typically played a fake news anchor or pitchman, a game show host, and other roles that took a little gravitas, but with a comic twist that, like the rest of the show, skewered everything and everybody who maybe took themselves just a little too seriously. Pat was part of a beloved cast that all got together at the request of the Seattle Times to celebrate Almost Live's 40th anniversary, and our Steve Kiggins was there.
The rumble of memories past builds to giggles.
Doesn't matter how many decades we're in between.
Yeah, you get together with this group of people and everybody instantly you remember all the stuff we did.
The comedians who trailblazed local television history on King 5's Almost Live reunited this June. Nearly every member of the show's cast came together at Seattle's Space Needle.
That's Rob.
A Northwest icon that often became a punchline on TV.
Our head writer, Jim Sharp, said this 30 years ago. He goes, you know, these are the good old days.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was prophetic in a way. That yeah. Now all this time has passed, and he was right.
And demand.
Almost Live hit the air in 1984 with Ross Schaefer as host. When an inflatable gorilla loomed atop the needle, the team took the wind out of the ape.
Let's go, boys!
We interrupt.
Later in 89, when John Keister was host, an April Fool's Day skit tricked viewers when a fake news report claimed the needle had toppled.
Bummer about the needle.
We've attacked the needle many times over the years. Yeah. It's always been kind of a comic staple, and for some reason, they went along with us.
Okay, everybody.
Almost Live lampooned local stereotypes and rivalries. A Seattle Times photo shoot captured the cast reunion where one Seattle icon birthed another, all to celebrate the show's exhibition at Seattle's Museum of History and Industry.
Just think it's really cool that we're now going to be part of that big collection. You know, feels very nice. You know, it feels good.
Yeah, that feels good until we learn that Bill Nye...
He's getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
He also has a live exhibit at the Smithsonian.
Yes, he continues to live his Forrest Gump life, just sort of walking through...
Speedwalking right through all...
Speedwalking through it all, yes.
At Seattle Center, Steve Kiggins, Northwest Now.
You can find the Times articles in the August 25th Sunday magazine and more in the paper's arts and entertainment section. The Almost Live celebration at Mohai runs through February of 2025. While we best know Pat as a character based on his comic television roles, he's also a prolific writer, producer, radio host, video game voiceover artist, and public speaker. Pat Cashman, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. You've been on my list for a long darn time, and we've finally been able to get our schedules coordinated to do this. Talk to me a little bit. Start with the start, and that is you growing up in Bend, Oregon. Talk about your childhood. You did a great bit on video recently where you went back to your hometown, and nobody knew you. Nobody cared. They must know who you are and what you've done.
That wasn't a bit. That's actually true. They don't know, and they don't care. Yeah, I did. I grew up in... little town called Bend, Oregon. It was a little town when I grew up there.
Yeah.
Maybe 12,000 people. It's 10 times that size now. And we had two radio stations, just two. And so when I got out of high school and college, I wanted to get into radio. And I thought, well, there's only two stations. So one of them played music that your parents would like to listen to. Andy Williams. The Ray Conniff singers, stuff like that. But the other station was the cool station. They played rock and roll music, and that's the one I wanted to work at, but they weren't hiring at the time. So I went to work at the other station, and I got a call one day from the program director at the cool station, and he said, "Hey, Pat, I've heard you on the air over there. Would you like to work over here?" And I said, well, maybe. He said, let me ask you this. How much money are you making over there at that other station? I said, well, I'm making $400 a month. He said, how does 425 sound?
Ooh.
Money talks, Tom. Yeah. I took the gig.
Big rolling back then.
Yeah.
$425 a month. You ended up producing commercials in Seattle, working on radio. Did you ever think about taking a crack at Hollywood, moving down to L.A. and trying acting? Or what was your initial dream? Was it an acting dream? Was it a TV dream? How did you see yourself early on?
Well, I guess I just was enthralled with the idea of broadcasting as a kid. And I would set up, they had a thing called record players in those days. I can't explain that technology to you now. We don't have the time. But I had it in my room, and so I would do my own little fake radio shows down there, and I'd make my brothers. I had four brothers. They'd have to come and listen. And so I was up to four or five listeners at a time.
Yeah.
But I just loved it so much, I wanted to pretend like I could be in that business. I loved, just listening to old radio shows that my parents still had around. And I thought, man, this is the business for me. I didn't know how I would get into it, but that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And as far as going to Hollywood, I got a couple of opportunities to do that. One of them was I was going to be a news anchor at a station in Nebraska somewhere. I used to be a network anchor, and now my fortunes have fallen, and now I'm just working in a relatively small market. And that was the premise of the show.
Right.
And it was going to be on 5 days a week, so it was scripted 5 days a week.
Wow.
And it'd be like being in a soap opera.
Yeah.
You'd have to go home every day, learn your lines for the next day.
Yep.
And so the money they were talking about, I wanted at least $425.
I was going to say $450 was probably your price,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the money was lousy. And then so I said, you know what, I'm not going to do it. And they said, the woman agent said the famous words that I hoped I would hear, and she said them, you're never going to work in this town again, mister. I said, well, that's okay, because I've never worked there in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You know, I don't think you being a news guy is so far-fetched. You have the voice, you have the presence. You with a change in mindset and a little work in journalism, I think you could have done it. Did you ever actually get pitched for that?
No, I did try it a couple of times, but my problem was I'd always be looking at the wrong camera.
Yeah, that'll slow you down.
Yeah, it really was a handicap for me. But I love the news. I love talking about politics and stuff. But I just never took myself seriously enough to think that I would be credible as a news person
to make that transition. And yet, that's the character you consistently played in Almost Live. You were the talk show host. You were the news anchor. You were the CEO doing the press conference. There was a certain amount of gravitas that you brought to those roles, but with a twist and an ironic sense of humor, poking fun at those who maybe took themselves a little too seriously, which I think everybody appreciates.
I think pomposity was my specialty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You play pomposity well.
Thank you. That's very kind.
It comes naturally to me, so it's very easy. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So talk about the Almost Live gig. How did you come to Seattle, and how did you find yourself on that show?
I had come to Seattle to be a commercial producer. In other words, a person that produces commercials.
Yep.
TV stations have sales departments. They go out and they get accounts, and then they have to produce a commercial to put on the air. People that don't have an ad agency that does that for them, that would be my job. I'd go out and go to the business, and we'd go out and I'd write a commercial. We'd go out and shoot it and put it on the air. And along the way, King TV was the place where I was plying that trade. And they decided they wanted to put a promotion department of their own. They used to have ad agencies that would do promotions. Stations have promotions. KBTC does, I'm sure. And they said, why don't we just do that here at the station? Why are we hiring this ad agency? Cashman, you be the creative director, and you'll write commercials, basically, for to sell our news product and our other programming.
Right.
And so that's what I did. And they gave me the opportunity not just to do standard promos, but I wanted to do funny ones, or at least personality-driven promos. A great news anchor named Jean Anderson, for example. I wanted to show her at home with her kids.
Or humanize them.
Yeah, or with her dad out fishing, and that kind of stuff. And when we could, we'd try to have a little twist, funny ending to them as well. So that's kind of how I got in the door there. And then about 1984, in fact, exactly 1984, a program director wanted to put on a local comedy TV show. And they tried a couple of times. They did some pilots. None of them quite worked. And but finally, they did a vehicle called Almost Live. And they went on the air. I think they were an hour long. It was on Sundays at 6 p.m., terrible time slot for a would-be comedy show. And I always equate it to like a student newspaper. Students disgruntled say, that's a crummy newspaper. We'll start our own newspaper. Yeah. Well, that always works for like one or two issues, and then you're out of ideas.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened with Almost Live. They had a small staff, and pretty soon, this hungry animal needed more food.
Got to feed that goat.
So they started going around, hey, can you do a bit? Could you? And Cashman, you write funny commercials. Why don't you write some funny bits? So I wasn't really part of the show initially, but I just would contribute things once in a while. It's kind of an enviable position to be in.
Yeah. And then you became, I would say, arguably one of the driving forces on that show.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I'll say it.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Can you say it again, please?
Sure. You were one of the driving forces on that show.
I can't.
With that said, do you think that show would work today? What made it work? And are we too sensitive and too tender and too politically correct for that show to work today?
Well, it's hard to go back all those 40 years now when the show started. But I think what made it work, it's not even a guess. It is what made it work, is that we focused on local neighborhoods and communities and the people who populated them. That's what people tuned in for. They can watch any number of other national comedy shows for those kind of laughs. But this was particular, and it was parochial, and it was about where people live in the neighborhoods. And if you lived in Ballard and they did a Ballard joke on Almost Live, man, you couldn't wait to tell your friends about it on Monday. And so for the most part, that was its lifeblood. Yeah. Let's keep it local. Let's make jokes about Kent and Linwood and Bellevue and Mercer Island. Yeah. And we would take a lot of existing franchises and make them...
Morph them.
They'd be like cops from Mercer Island.
Yeah.
Cops from
with a bunch of bored guys. Yeah. There's no crime, right?
Yeah. That's basically what it... Cops in Leavenworth, the policemen wore lederhosen. You know? And they played bad boys on one of those longhorns, too.
A couple months ago, in this past summer, you were part of a Seattle Times cover story shoot for the 40th anniversary of Almost Live.
Yeah, go figure.
And in August, they started the exhibit at Mohai for the show. That seems like a pretty big honor. Does it feel like 40 years ago?
No, yeah. It doesn't. I don't even know what 40 years feels like, but I always thought it would take longer than the 40 years have. They've kind of flown by. But it's funny, when we got back together again, as try as we might, you do lose touch with some of your colleagues from those days. It's inevitable. So when we all got back together again, it's like you've just picked right up.
Yeah.
You know, you always hear that, but it really was like that again. And we would ruminate about, could we do jokes about, I don't know, Seattle's city council now.
Yeah. Everybody. Or prostitution on Aurora with the lawyers. I mean, something like that.
Yeah, no.
Because now it's about human trafficking.
That's right.
It's not funny anymore, Pat.
So my point is, I guess, if I had one, is that you could do a show like that. It just would be different now. You'd have different sensitivities. We look at some of the old bits we did on Almost Live and go, I don't think we could do that now.
Yeah.
But we could do that if we changed it this way. Sometimes we would do things that were so controversial or so fraught with peril, that we would just avoid the type. And I'm thinking of one in particular. It's tawdry. I'm sorry, but there was a fellow who years ago down in Enumclaw, I believe it is, had his way, shall I say, with a horse.
Right.
It made the news. So we said, what are we going to do? Everybody's talking about it. We got to do something.
Yeah,
so we just simply began the show. John Keister came out and was doing his monologue. And we got two interns to walk out in a horse outfit. And then John was just able to look over and say, no, we're not going there. And that, but so we made
enough
a comment.
Enough said. Yeah.
Nothing would be funnier than that anyway.
Or should be, at least.
Yeah.
Was working on that show a riot, or was it hard, or were people competitive and trying to get bits on the air? What was the tone and the tenor of working that program?
Well, I've always heard and read a lot about places like Saturday Night Live, where it would be very competitive.
Yeah.
It would be a lot of backbiting. You're desperate to, you know, get something on the air. They have not done any of my bits. I'm really getting frustrated. None of that was my experience at Almost Live. It was very collegial. There was certainly competition, but it wasn't as overt as it would be in other places. And basically our mission was, we got to get this show on the air, and we welcome any and all good ideas, and we got to execute them. We don't have a month to plan this thing. We got 2 days to get going here and go shoot a bit. And so there was a bit of pressure that way, but it never felt like a pressure cooker to me.
Anyway,
it was just fun.
40 years ago since the program started here in 2024, 25 years since the show ended, and it kept on in syndication, and it has been in reruns, which is possibly why people still know about it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And are still familiar with the cast. Talk a little bit about what you do to keep from looking backwards too much. I think that's a trap that people in our profession can fall into sometime. Hey, those were the good old days. Man, in the 90s, we did this. We were flying around with our hair on fire out of a helicopter covering news stories. Well, what are you working on now? What are you doing? How do you do that when people immediately want to go back to Almost Live with you? What has kept you occupied, and what has kept you from being too rearward looking?
Well, my paper route. I still have a paper route, so I always can.
You're in the media.
Yeah. I can always fall back on that. And as a food taster for a number of years for the Alpo factory. Basically, Almost Live provided, I think, all of the people on it with a platform that people said, oh, I've seen you on, I know who you are.
Yeah.
And that was greatly beneficial when you're looking for other kinds of work. And they would think of you to be in a commercial, or think of you to be on another TV show, or to write something. So it was just a great springboard for other things. Other than that, I don't look back at it, and gee, I wish I was still doing it. It was a 15-year moment in time.
Yes.
But it was a remarkable opportunity. I think of so many brilliant people walking around this area that would have been way better than me on that show, but they just didn't get the chance.
Yeah.
I just happened to be in the building.
Well, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Thank you.
You probably have a lifetime golden ticket to Taco Time, I would guess. Mm-hmm. So you can eat whatever you want. So I don't know if you're still working, but I mean, you do public speaking. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece.
I do a lot of private speaking too.
I'm sure you do. Yeah, just keep that on the DL. So what do you do to fill the time?
That's what I do. I do that. I do a couple of podcasts. There's one, if anybody is interested, in Almost Live. I interviewed each cast member, the old producers, almost anybody tangentially involved with Almost Live, in a whole series of interviews on a website called almostlivestillalive.com.
Okay.
And that's the other miraculous thing. Those were all still alive.
Yeah.
That could change before this interview goes on the air.
Yeah, let's hope not. Keep it together over there, Pat.
It's not me. I'm a little dizzy right now.
Yeah, try not to stroke out here at
you
Northwest.
You can tell I'm a pro, though, because I keep touching my microphone.
Yeah, you're a real pro.
And I know audio guys love that.
You got to go to broadcast school to learn that one.
Yeah.
You did attempt, talk a little bit about the 206. That was an attempt to spin off Almost Live and to kind of reinvigorate it. It was on, then it went away, but then you got picked up in some other markets. I'm a little fuzzy on that. How did that come about, and what ended up happening with it?
The 206, we only used the predicate of Almost Live as a way to say, well, let's see what they got. You know, mm-hmm. if we were just a complete unknowns trying to start a local comedy show again, it might have never happened. So we kind of engineered it in a backwards sort of way. We went to a couple of comedy clubs. We did a little stand-up, we being my son, Chris, me, and John Keister. And then we would play some videotapes at the comedy venue of bits that we had shot maybe a couple of weeks ago. We were just trying to get the temperature of the audience and see, well, do people still want this kind of thing around here? Well, they did. It seemed to us that they did. So that's how the show got on the air. King TV ran it, but it wasn't produced at King TV. We just did it ourselves in a local studio, mostly at Fremont Studios.
Yeah.
In the north part of Seattle, and that was it. Again, stressing localness as much as we could.
Yeah.
Then at one point we got an opportunity to get on in other markets.
And, right.
And that was going to be Boise. That was going to be Spokane, Portland, Eugene, Medford, Oregon. So we thought, well, the 206 as a title wouldn't make any sense there. So we changed the show's name to Up Late Northwest.
Okay.
And we thought, because we're on in all these markets now, advertising is going to be a breeze.
Right.
People will be knocking at our door.
Of course.
Come on, Les Schwab. Yes, come on in.
Yeah.
But it didn't work that way. In fact, we find it even more difficult to find sponsors. And it got to the point where my son and I were paying the staff and the crew and everybody, and that was it. The money was gone after that. So much as we loved it, we realized we can't sustain this.
Talk a little bit about the demise of local production in local television. You and I both remember times when TV stations would have a cooking show and a kids show and in Seattle's case, a comedy show, which was unusual for this market. But generally speaking, local production was a thing if you owned a local TV station. It's so sad to see it gone. There is news, of course, that's locally produced, but everything else is gone. And it added such a vitality to the TV station when there are many things going on, an afternoon talk show, and those staffs and those crews. What happened there, and why can't we have it anymore?
I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that. A lot of local TV is not owned locally. That's the fact. I mean, King TV now was owned for a while by a company in Rhode Island, and then now I think it's an outfit out of Texas, but it's not local ownership anymore, so they don't really have a lot of skin in the game locally, because they got other stations around the country. So that's part of it, I think. But is it really sad that it's not that way anymore? Well, it's in the eye and ear of the beholder, I guess. A younger person, 20s and 30s, they don't know what kind of television you were talking about just now, Tom. So they don't miss it because they never knew it.
Yeah. And they can go on YouTube, create their own thing with an iPhone.
Absolutely.
And they have a show.
Yeah. It always occurs to me when I'm driving down any neighborhood that I said, I bet there's at least four studios just in this block, indoor people have in their house. Everybody's got that capability now and can go out and shoot their own stuff.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
What did you consider to be your secret sauce? If Pat Cashman kept working, he kept finding the next gig, why?
I don't know. I guess when I drive down the street, go into a supermarket, go into a mall or, church or wherever, I'm always looking for stuff. Always looking for something that's funny or isn't that a weird thing?
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if anybody else ever noticed that.
Yeah.
And it can be just something simple like that. I remember I did a bit. I used to come in from the parking garage at King TV every day, and there'd be a big sign on a door in front of me that said, not an exit. I think, well, why is the door even there if that's not an right. exit? And then that developed into a whole bit where there's a committee of people, a safety committee, because the bit starts with a guy going out that door just to see why it's not an exit, and then he falls five stories to the street below. Then they impanel a safety committee to say, now why does this keep happening? Could it be something to do with the door saying not an exit?
Yeah.
It doesn't tell you what the consequences would be, however, if you did go out that door. So we need to put more information on there. And then one timid guy says, I got an idea. Why don't we just board it up so nobody can go through it? And everybody goes, that's a stupid idea. They put him down, he backs down and says, no, you're right. No, that would be no solution.
So that innate observational capability and creativity
is not the best example, but that's what it is.
You're constantly going through that process. In our last 60 seconds here, we joked about you having a stroke here on the set of Northwest Now. Let's hope you have many good years in front of you. But when you think about legacy, what do you want people to remember or to know about Pat Cashman, and what are you most proud of?
I paid most of my taxes. I never killed a guy intentionally. No, seriously, I don't think about much about that. Those things, if they meant something to somebody, that's great, but nothing lasts forever. Just for me, it was just a wonderful opportunity to get to do something that I really didn't deserve to get. It was just kind of a series of lucky accidents. And next thing you know, you look back and say, hey, that was quite a ride.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe I managed to jump that train.
Well, in your case, here's to happenstance. We are glad to have you. Thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now, Pat.
Thanks, Tom. Where's the exit?
The term treasure is thrown around pretty easily these days. The bottom line, Pat Cashman is a treasure with a long history of entertaining all of us here in the Pacific Northwest. My thanks to Pat for coming to Northwest Now. I hope this program got you thinking and talking. You can watch this program and find it on the web at kbtc.org, stream it through the PBS app, or listen on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That's going to do it for this edition of Northwest Now. Until next time, I'm Tom Lason. Thanks for watching.